Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She's all these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
You know, it just occurred to me that I am sitting really far away from you today because I looked up and you're far away, so I'm going to have to readjust my table and chair here in a second.
It's probably my fault. I moved the table a little about a week ago.
I feel like I'm in timeout. Hey, have you mastered the art of apology?
I apologize a lot, if that's what you mean. I'm not afraid to apologize. I do find that apology will fix a lot of things really easily, and I wish some people would apologize more. I will say recently, in my adult life, I had a sort of a falling out with a friend that was a real bummer, and it's because neither one of us will apologize. And I hate to be so stubborn, but I just, you know, it's one of those things. Every once in a while, you're just like, no, I'm not doing it again.
Well, and it's interesting because that's where we're going today. We're going to talk about the art of the apology, because I've been feeling the energy of apologies all around my life for some reason, either having to make apologies or having to accept apologies, and just from the wide range and spectrum of apologies, from the minor, you know, elbows bump, oh, excuse me, or I'm sorry for that, to like the grandiose kind of life-changing transgressions that make you feel like, wow, I might have really altered this relationship or damaged my social status or in some way that may not be repaired. It feels like this is coming around, and I don't think it's just in my life. I think I'm also sensitized to it right now because of the Me Too movement, and you see a lot of powerful people going on the mea culpa tour, you know, giving their explanations as to why they behaved badly. And if you read the literature from a lot of psychotherapists who are talking about how the healing or the apologies are going, most of them feel like what we're seeing in the media are very poor examples of apologies, that they are not true expressions of grief or remorse, but really about trying to CYA, each person trying to cover their own story or their own reputation instead of really thinking about the impact on the other. And so I thought it would be interesting today to kind of talk about the nuances or the grand scope of apologies and what that looks like, and to talk about the actual steps towards an effective apology, because like all of communication, apologizing is a learned skill. You know, we have to learn those social norms, those social expectations, those social exchanges, and you know, going along with kind of this underlying theme that seems of all things in our society right now, the more we engage in the virtual way we communicate, the less face-to-face communication we have, the more challenged people are in their basic communication skills, their ability to look someone in the eye, to own their actions or their behavior, and to be able to have a conversation, and not just in the person trying to have that face-to-face contact, but also in our ability to receive someone's apology, to be able to hear their remorse or their empathy and to give forgiveness or to move forward. That I see a lot in my life and in the world around me and with students and friends and clients and family, that there is kind of a disconnect in both ways, the inability to really stand up and own our actions and behaviors, but also to be able to hear someone when they are apologizing and to accept that and to move forward, that it feels like there's a lot of hanging on that people are doing, hanging on to transgressions, hanging on to the anger, hanging on to the slights as a way of almost fueling their life. It's almost as if we're looking for ways to feel hurt and angry to justify maybe our bad behavior, or you know, maybe our inability to connect. Because quite often in intimate relationships, you know, we'll blame the other person for the disconnect in the relationship. But we're not recognizing is that our inability to give forgiveness, move forward, recognize our own part of the problem is a way of putting up a screen so we don't have to delve into our own challenges with intimacy, our own insecurities. We can make it about the other person, right? If they would just change, if they were better, if they weren't this, if they weren't that, our relationship would be great. And so it sets up this disconnect.
Yeah. I also do something you just said about just sort of going back to the act of the apology and thinking about, I recently have had to apologize for something, and you know, we all make mistakes. I think that's the thing that we need to realize is that everyone is going to make mistakes and how we handle it. And sometimes just a really sincere apology, and you can explain your actions, and then just, you know, the intent behind, at least for me, is always, you know, I'm so sorry that that wasn't the intent. We can only move forward and grow from this, hopefully together.
And I wonder also, when you said that, if we're error phobic. You know, that maybe we've forgotten that we all make mistakes. Maybe we're holding each other and ourselves to too high of a standard, that it becomes difficult to apologize because we've forgotten how easy it is to slip and to say something with unintended hurt. You know, and that's going to the whole conversation with our, you know, Black Lives Matter and the Women's March and the gun laws. Like, there's a lot of people who are feeling unheard, who are feeling misunderstood, who are feeling discounted. And I maybe part of this problem is that we are unable to hear apologies, to find common ground, to move forward, that there's almost, and I think I said this earlier, there's almost this energy about not accepting apologies and being able to stay in that place of anger so that everyone feels stuck.
Yeah, we're in a very, very divided time right now, so a lot of people may not be willing to hear from the other party.
Right, and that's part of what we're going to talk about today, is that just because we offer the apology also may not put a bow on the problem. That quite often the apology is just the opening offer to start the healing. That, you know, just because you get the courage up to own your actions and make the apology, then you have to be willing to allow the other person to start processing those feelings they're having. And I think oftentimes we feel like, well, I said I'm sorry. What more do you want? It's like, well, I now want to express all of the repercussions that I've experienced since this transgression happened. And also to pay attention to the spectrum of transgressions. You know, again, from the elbow bump and I'm sorry to infidelity or something that's major and everything in between. Like, what is the level of apology that's expected? And it's also interesting because there's, you know, a lot of research has been done about women's tendency to apologize all the time. And I'm not going to say just women, because I think there's a masculine and a feminine energy that people have, that we all have a bit. I've talked about before in the show, you know, that we all, the yin and yang, have the masculine and the feminine. And that masculine energy is a little more assertive and take charge and, you know, kind of feeling like you're in the doing mode of life. And the feminine energy is more of that being, nurturing the emotions, nurturing the relationships. So anyone who is heavy on the feminine side of relating tend to apologize too much. And there's a lot of thought as to why. Maybe that, you know, those in the feminine mode are so worried about kind of the nurturing of the relationships, they're quick to want to apologize and keep things okay. But a lot of times for women, it's years of being discounted, right, as a member of society, or that they've been trained to want to avoid any conflict or to be making a scene. Women have been trained to avoid criticism and to achieve, to get disapproval. And so maybe there's that societal training of I'll just continue to apologize. And I don't know if you watch any of Amy Schumer's Inside Amy Schumer show.
I watch it a little bit. I have a friend that's on the show. We'll tune in when he's on, and then it's always hilarious.
So one of the skits that she did a while back was a group of women in a meeting, and they were so busy apologizing to each other for, like, you know, I'm sorry I said that. Oh, did I get in your way? That they never got to the meat of the meeting because it was all about apologies. So, you know, not only do I want to talk about the art of the apology, but I also want to talk about kind of the nuanced piece of it. Like, what if you're someone who just apologizes all the time, and is that really serving you? And what if you're someone who expects to be apologized to all the time? You know, if you find yourself in a constant state of being aggrieved, right? If you find yourself in a state where you always feel like the world owes you an apology, then maybe that is the time that you really need to get self-focused and start paying attention to what is my part of this that I'm assuming that I'm constantly being wronged by those around me.
You know, I think you just summed up, I watch a lot of Real Housewives when I'm not at work to sort of decompress.
I like
some
your
work
guilty and mission there.
And it pretty much sums up pretty much all the shows, either why they won't apologize or why they expect one at all times.
Yeah. And I guess that's what makes good drama in life, is that if we get too rooted on one side or the other, then it just brews for a fight. So that's where we're going today. I think, you know, we'll be opening up the phone lines, and I think the question on the table is going to be, when was the time when apology that you offered went really well? And how did it heal that relationship or help you move forward? And when was a time that an apology went terribly wrong and didn't have the outcome you were hoping for? So that's what I'm looking for today, is your experience with apologies. A time you did it very well, or maybe someone apologized to you and it went really well, or a time it went terribly wrong. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. You can find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast the show by visiting Apple Podcasts and subscribing to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I want to thank you, Tyler, because you're so great about getting the shows up on the on this website right at the minute we're done. So thank you for that. Because when people send me a message or a letter, it's like, how can I listen to the show? I go, oh, Tyler's got it handled.
Absolutely. Of course. You're welcome.
So I appreciate that. So again, we're going to open up the phone lines in a moment, 805-781-3875. We're going to talk about apologies. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I'm really sorry, Stephen, but your bicycle's been stolen. I was watching it for you till you came back in the fall. I guess I didn't do such a good job after all. I was feeling really sorry, Stephen, and I spent all morning grieving. And everybody's saying you'll take the news gracefully. Somehow I don't think I'll be getting off that easy.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today I'm grappling with the art of the apology, and how do we teach the skills for apology to our children? There's a lot of discussion about, should we force our children to apologize, or, you know, prompt our children to apologize when they're young, when something happens? Or is this a skill that they need to develop over time because it requires empathy? If we tell a child, you know, say, I'm sorry for throwing sand, or say, I'm sorry for biting you, do they really understand what it is they're apologizing for? And it's interesting because studies have shown that children, even from a young age, starting around year two, can empathize with others. They've done studies that show that children recognize when someone is distressed or sad. And by that time, by age two, they understand that people have preferences and perspectives and intentions that will differ from their own. And then they use that to that understanding that people and other children have different desires, to start engaging in pro-social behavior, learning to share, learning to play side by side. And then again, understanding when someone is hurt and apologizing, and maybe not having the terminology, knowing what an apology is. And there's where the parenting piece steps in, that, you know, the communication is a learned skill. And so our children might have the inherent understanding that they want to comfort someone else or offer aid, but they don't have the skills to go around and and make those relationships better. So it's important for parents to build on the foundation that children already have for this kind of pro-social behavior, and help them understand how they can become more socially competent, caring people. And the study also shows, though, that there's a limit to how long parents should be prompting their children to apologize. You know, our hope is that once we model apologies, we model for our children all of the adult behaviors, the socially conscious and competent behaviors that we would like them to express when they're older. And as we always need to remember that our children are watching us all of the time. But at some point, adults need to kind of back out and allow children to naturally understand when is the right time to apologize and how to apologize. Because when they were looking at the behavior of children, children under the age of 4 or 5 didn't see really a difference in a parent-prompted apology or a spontaneous apology, that they accepted that apology and felt better and felt less hurt either way, whether it was parent-prompted or spontaneous. But by the time children hit around age 4 through age 7, children who received apologies that were parent-prompted were less apt to kind of feel better about the apologies. They recognized that it was parent-prompted and maybe not really felt. And it was also interesting that they found that children between 2 and 4, when another child apologizes, like, oh, I'm sorry I stepped on you, or I'm sorry I took the book, or I'm sorry I hit you, that child who was apologized to was more apt to share and continue interacting with the transgressor than children who didn't apologize or say, I'm sorry, or I'm sorry I bumped into you. So there's a very strong social foundation that's built when we have the capacity to apologize and recognize the feelings of others. And you know, apology in itself is kind of built around this whole idea of empathy and our ability to recognize and connect with the felt experiences of others. And it's something that we can learn to tap into. Some people have a natural sense of empathy, and some people kind of have to learn to tap into it. But having that empathy for another person's experience is really kind of at the heart of successful apologizing. So this last weekend, I was with 6 of my closest friends that I've known since kindergarten, many of them, and we've grown up together. And it was the 30th year that we've had this gathering of these women, of these, I always say girls, because when we're together, I feel like we're all still kids. But it's amazing to be in a group where you know each other's stories. You know, you can't tell any lies or make up your history in different ways because someone was there and knows exactly what happened. The other thing that's wonderful about it is as we get older, you know, we're all in our late 50s now, there's no filters. We talk about everything that's happening in our lives, our bodies changing and our relationships changing and our kids. We just kind of lay it out there. But it's so nice to have one of them say, oh, I'm having that same experience, or oh, that's how my body's changing, to have kind of that affirmation that we're all kind of in the same boat. But what's interesting is when we started this group, there were 10 of us, and now we're down to 6. And I recognize that over the course of these 30 years, a couple people have kind of dropped out of the group because of hurts, transgressions, you know, actual or perceived, you know, things that were maybe apologized for or not apologized for, but that rift, that small crack in the relationship at some point became too big to repair. And that's kind of what got me thinking about how we get into this place with apologies. You know, why do some of our attempts to apologize fall flat? Why, when even we have the best of intentions to be in a relationship, it may not heal? And how do we learn that skill? So one of my favorite psychotherapists, authors is Harriet Lerner. I don't know if you're familiar with her work, but she's written The Dance of Anger, The Dance of Intimacy, just 12 different books on kind of the nitty-gritty of relationships and a really easy way to grasp and understand and connect with. I love her work, Harriet Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R. And I came across an article that she wrote from a book that she wrote about apologies. And so I wanted to share a bit of her article, and then we'll open up the phone lines. But I just kind of wanted to set the stage for what came up for me. Harriet Lerner says that a true apology is a great gift. It can help free a person who's been hurt from life-draining anger, bitterness, and pain. It validates the person's feelings and their reality by affirming that what they were feeling was real and made sense. So when we apologize to someone, we actually allow them to feel like, I'm not nuts here. I actually am validated in feeling hurt or anger. But it also gives the hurt person the space to explore the possibilities of healing and moving forward instead of being stuck in the hurt and anger and that sense of injustice, which tends to start to become toxic and eat away at us and causes stress and backaches and headaches and anxiety and rifts in relationships. Harriet Lerner also says that a true apology is also a gift to our individual growth and our work towards becoming our best selves. Because I would hope that we all, as we're growing and aging, hope that we continue to grow and expand and evolve. And she says that to apologize requires that we see ourselves objectively, to take a clear look at the way our behavior affects others and be able to acknowledge when we've acted in a way that negatively impacts another. And when we're able to take such a raw look at ourselves, it helps us not only to earn the respect of others, because it takes courage to own our bad behavior, to speak up when we know we've done something wrong or hurt someone else, but also helps us grow in our own maturity. Whether or not the apology ends up healing the relationship, the fact that we've opened the door and made space for the healing can help grow our own sense of self-awareness and maturity. And overall, a good apology, and I'm going to keep stating a good apology, because there are definitely effective apologies and apologies that fall flat. But a good apology is good for relationships, because in order to have a thriving, healthy relationship, you're going to have conflict. There will be things you disagree with. Whenever there are two people with differing intentions, you're going to have conflict. And if you're in a loving, intimate relationship, but you still are strong individuals, there's going to be conflict. And so in order for this relationship to weather conflict, arguments, maybe a knockdown, drag out, you know, screaming fight or misunderstandings, in order to be able to get through those, we have to be able to reflect on our behaviors. We have to be able to reflect on our own behavior and listen to the other person's feelings and how this experience, this relationship is impacting them, and then do our best to make it right. You know, we talk about fair fighting or how to manage conflict or deal with conflict. Part of that requires the apology. You know, how do we make up after we have a knockdown drag out? And some couples will just try to kind of sweep it under the rug, and other couples will say, well, let's, you know, really get down to nitty gritty. And some couples will, you know, not sleep well until something is resolved. Unfortunately, if you lack self-awareness or practice in communication skills or sharing an apology, or you lack education or the modeling from someone else, an adult who taught you how to apologize and offer forgiveness, then we're just as likely to fail at giving an apology, causing actually more damage and disconnect. Because ultimately, an empty, self-excusing attempt to apologize without taking any responsibility can have more damage on the relationship than actually saying nothing at all. Because if you attempt to apologize and you don't address the correct issue or why the person feels hurt, they're going to feel more wounded and more hurt by your inability to recognize why they're upset. Conversely, because in the field of psychotherapy, the answer to all questions is it depends, because nothing is black and white. No relational experience follows a set path. There's always those nuances. You know, there may be times where you try your best with an apology and it doesn't change anything. Or you're in a relationship with someone who can't do their own work and can't accept the apology but expects to be apologized to all the time, which keeps you stuck. So there's a lot of nuances. And then the other part, I think, that makes apologies and relationships challenging is that quite often we stew with the embarrassment or the anxiety or sadness for having wronged someone. And when we finally muster the courage to speak up and apologize, we hope that that's going to tie a bow on the situation and make it all better. But really, in all honesty, if it's a deep hurt and a big wounding, maybe infidelity or some sort of betrayal or some sort of break in trust, that apology, that first attempt, probably won't be sufficient because the person will then need to process the apology and need to process the feelings they've been holding for so long and want to talk it out. They're going to want to maybe get angry. They're going to want to yell. They're going to want to scream. They're going to want to continue feeling the anger until they feel fully heard, and then the healing can happen. And in a lot of couples, when someone comes forward and maybe admits an infidelity or, you know, a betrayal, they're hoping that, you know, once they say that, they're feeling better. Their guilt has been alleviated. They're starting to feel like they want to move forward. It's like, whew, I got that off my chest. Things are good now. Let's get back to the way things were. But the person that was hurt, the person that was aggrieved, is just beginning the process of healing. And that can be a real challenge for couples because we have to be able to hold the response of the person we're apologizing to. It's one piece to apologize. It's a whole nother piece to be able to have the courage to hear what they're going to say in response to our apology. Because although we may feel like we've cleared the air, it may not clear the air for the person who's been hurt, and we have to be willing to sit with that. And for a lot of couples, the person who apologizes doesn't have the wherewithal to stick with the hurt and the reaction that comes back, and then they get frustrated and want to hang out, want to leave the relationship. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. Kind of on the table today is my question, is there a time when an apology went well for you? And is there a time when an apology went terribly wrong? Think about that. And we'll be back in a moment to take your calls and continue our conversation. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Monica. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind?
Yes.
I'm the Monica that you have sent some students to interview me.
Thank you, Monica. I appreciate you. You have shared wisdom with many a student.
And the best advice that we got when we went to premarital counseling 60 years ago was, don't leave the house angry, don't go to bed angry, and it's better to say I'm sorry once too often than once too few.
Ah, I love that. And how did that work out for you?
It worked out wonderful for 50 years, but now I've been alone for 10. But anyhow, it worked.
I'm so glad. And it's interesting because it seems so simple, those two words, I'm sorry, and yet sometimes they're so difficult to get to.
Anyhow, it worked.
I'm so glad.
It was nice talking to you, and you can send more students if the need arises.
I have need every quarter, Monica, so I will be giving you a call.
Thank you.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling in. You know, Tyler, one of the assignments in my family psychology class, every quarter, they are tasked with having a conversation with an elder. And so it kind of goes along with the whole building of communication skills, because I'm so concerned that they're not learning the basics of interacting.
Oh, yeah.
And so they have to go into the community and strike up a conversation with someone who's 75 years old or older.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of things that come up for them. How do I find old people? You know, because they don't look around. They just see themselves, or they're only on campus. So there's that piece. And then what do we talk about? And I don't know what to say. And I have to say, in all honesty, it is the most successful of all the assignments I give. Although the Tech Fast is also helpful. But this assignment is great because the students across the board end up really feeling like they've connected with someone. They have a whole new sense of respect for their elders and the whole art of conversation. And so, you know, I'm always looking for elders that are willing to have a conversation with my students. So you can call Tyler and he'll take your name and number, 75 years or older. Older is even better because my dad, you know, turned 80 this year, and he's almost too young to be an elder because he's still so active in his life and, you know, racing cars. And so, you know, the older the elder, I think the more learning for my students. But our number is 805-781-3875. And just think of all of the skills and knowledge we gain by the time we're 75, 80 years old. And, you know, we're in a culture and a society that reveres youth. And youth is so naive. It's such an interesting thing that we pin all of our hopes for the future and all of our beliefs and all of our attachment to the world, to the ideas and experiences of people that are under the age of 50 or under the age of 40. You know, I've said it often in the show, like, I'm always stunned when people want to take parenting advice from someone whose kids are still young, or career advice from someone who hasn't retired yet. They have no idea how their life has turned out or how their kids have turned out, because they're still in the midst of it. So it's interesting that we don't flip our whole trajectory in learning about life to paying attention to those who have actually lived a life. But then it falls on the elders, of course, to also be able to impart their stories and their wisdom without becoming too winded, too long-winded, too wordy, or, you know, too, I don't know what the word is, like too old. That's not another word to say. But they're, you know, as we get into our old age and there's so much that we want to share and pass on, we have to be able to express those stories that still are a dialogue, you know, to still take an interest in what young people have to say, to still listen to them and what their concerns and interests are, and make it a dialogue. Because I think in the elder conversations, quite often they have so much to share and so much wisdom, and they discount the experiences or feelings of the youth. And so instead of building a relationship, it becomes a monologue. And really what we're hoping is that people share experiences cross-culturally and cross-generationally and cross-gender and cross every line that marginalizes us, and start to talk with each other, because that's the key to healing all of the things that are challenging and calling our social world into question, is our inability to hear each other. You know, we're so rooted in our own sense of transgressions or anger or insults or ways we've been harmed or ways we've been diminished. We get so caught in that we stop communicating and we create bigger divides. And so maybe it all starts with the apology, like that simple act of saying, I'm sorry, I misunderstood, or I didn't take into account how this would affect you. You know, that unconscious slight, or, you know, one of the examples that I was reading from Harriet Lerner's book was a mother really wanted to reconnect with her daughter and was trying to kind of find this common ground because they had had such a huge rift and separation. And one of the mother's attempts was to invite the daughter to go to a movie. And the movie that they went to showed a scene that triggered and it was connected to the experience that the young girl had had. She had been raped. The movie had a scene in it that was a rape scene, and the mother didn't know that or didn't recognize it, and the daughter got very triggered and was very upset and got angry at her mother. Why would you drag me through this? Why are you doing this? You know, it just, you don't understand. And just instead of the apology and the attempt to get things better, it caused a greater rift. And so how powerful, again, for the mother turned and said, I had no idea. I was insensitive. I should have pre-screened the movie. Because when we really listen to someone, when we really pay attention to their experience, whether we feel like it's folly, whether it doesn't seem like something that would concern us, whether it doesn't seem like something that would directly impact us, if we can use that empathy to understand, I can see why this might hurt you, or I'm going to pay attention to something that might trigger you or make you feel bad, that willingness to listen and put the other person's feelings and experience in the forefront, I can do wonders for healing cavernous rifts. So clearly, Tyler, I'm the only one who struggles with apologies. I mean, because it's, I can think of many times when I had an apology that didn't go the way I'd hoped, and apologies that actually went really well. And I bet you, just, do you have an example of a time that you really hit it on the nose or fell flat?
I mean, what I was hanging out with, you talked about being with your best girlfriends, and I was just with one of my best friends over the weekend in San Francisco, and we've known each other, it's embarrassing to say, over 20 years at least. And we were talking about just our relationships with other people and then our group's mentality, and our group has little, you know, everyone relates to each other differently or whatever, mm-hmm. but my best friend and I were talking about, you know, we get mad at each other and then it usually only lasts about 24 hours and the next day usually involves some sort of apology. We used to live together too, and so that was just our relationship, but other people, you know, in the group, it's really hard for them to apologize. And so then as a result, we spend a lot of time talking about them behind their back about how they can't apologize. As friendship goes, as friendship groups go, you know, it's, we all talk about each other and all the horrible things that we do, but still love each other.
And it's interesting you brought that up too, because that is very much how friendship groups are defined and family groups are defined, is that we can talk about each other right behind each other's back, and
but no one else can.
Right. Anyone outside of the group would be completely shut down. And that is, I think that's one of the things that mark a very strong intimate relationship within a group, because families often complain, like, why does my sister or brother know everything about us? And why do my parents tell them? Well, because that is our people and we share the details of each other's lives. That's how we stay connected. It's kind of the essence of gossip. You know, gossip has a very bad reputation, and even saying it out loud, people get very offended and it always seems to be negative. But if you go back to kind of the essence or the beginning of gossip as part of a cultural phenomenon. In Greek fishing villages, the women would step out on their porch in the morning and they would sing their laments, kind of early rapping. And they would kind of sing about how they'd been wronged by their man and their sons don't come home and they're a bum. And then the neighbors would all chime in and say, here's mine also. And it's kind of the way that we connect our social groups is who we can complain about our people to, or who we can talk about each other.
I always, not everyone agrees with me, but I always say that friendship are the people that you can be mean to. So
that's interesting. Yeah. And they still love you and get you for in the spirit that it is.
Yeah. So that's the friends of a group, the ones we're not nice to, because we know we can get away with it. And it all comes out of love.
Well, it's that idea that, you know, it's easy to love people when they're on their best behavior, uh-huh. right? You can love anyone who's being kind and generous and, you know, effusive and nice. The real task of intimacy is to love those people when they're not being nice, when they're not in their best moment, when they're hangry or they disappoint you. And that's really the testament of intimacy and the connection.
You know, I have to wonder while we're sitting here talking if anyone out there just has an apology on their mind that they haven't been able to get out there. You know, it's an apology that's lingering and they just can't find the words to say it.
Yeah, it is. And there's, you know, it's funny, when I was looking for songs for the show today, there are a lot of apology songs. Mm-hmm. There are a ton to choose from, and a lot of videos on YouTube that people created as an apology to other people. I started reading a lot of people's apology YouTube videos that they must have sent at one time. But yeah, our number is 805-781-3875. We're talking about the art of apology and asking about a time when you gave an apology that went really well, or a time when it went terribly wrong, or as Tyler said, maybe an apology you haven't quite been able to get to yet for fear of the repercussions or how it will be received. 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the reluctant therapist. And let's talk about an effective apology, because there is actually a form to it, a framework for it. And an effective apology fundamentally is an apology. Fundamentally, an apology is a communications tool. And it's used to acknowledge violations of social expectations or norms. It's kind of a scientific description of an apology. So we're utilizing this communication tool to acknowledge violations of social expectations or norms. It's our opportunity to take responsibility for our actions and how they've impacted others, ask for forgiveness, and then in doing so, repair ruptures in our relationships and restore, hopefully, our social standing. And ultimately, if all goes well, to ease the feelings of guilt that we're carrying and need to apologize for. So the five basic steps of an apology are, first, a clear I'm sorry statement. I am sorry that I let you down and missed your birthday party. Just a clear I'm sorry statement. The second step is an expression of regret for what happened. I had no idea that missing your party was going to cause you such embarrassment or such discomfort, or I'm sorry that my behavior caused you to feel hurt or sad. So I'm sorry, an expression of regret for what happened. So you need to acknowledge what the event was or what the experience was that caused the hurt. Then the third step is an acknowledgement that expectations about the relationship or social norms were violated. So you might say, you know, I recognize that I needed to call you 24 hours in advance, or I should have let you know in something other than a text, or I wish I had explained why I was going to be late before, you got your feelings hurt. The fourth step is the biggie. It's the empathy statement. And here is where you recognize the full impact of your actions or words on the other. So the empathy, right? I can only imagine how disappointed or hurt or angry or betrayed you must feel by my actions, and how you must have felt embarrassed in front of others, or how my words must have made you feel belittled. That empathy statement, owning that you recognize that your behavior made someone feel or experience pain in some way. And then finally, the fifth step is that request for forgiveness. I hope you can forgive me. I hope that we can move past this at some time. So those are the five basic steps. Where we run into a lot of trouble is the expectation, one, that the person is immediately going to forgive us and things will be better, or that somehow their job is to help us feel better and ease our sense of guilt and our bad feelings by accepting our apology. And not understanding with empathy how the person was hurt. Because it's one thing to say, I'm sorry you got your feelings hurt, you're really sensitive. That would be a failed apology, as opposed to, I'm so sorry I hurt your feelings. I didn't realize that I was speaking of something that was sensitive to you. I can only imagine how this triggered feelings that you had before, and I hope you can forgive me for being so off. The basics of the apology. 781-3875. Hi, Karen, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, what's on my mind is what I did a lot of damage to people in my life. Mm-hmm. And what I found is through a program, when I was able to take full responsibility for my stuff, my amends and apologies have been beautiful and accepted. And my gratitude around that is it had to be real. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be, hey, I'm sorry. Oh, God, I'm really sorry about that. It had to be, you know what, I'm really sorry, and this won't happen again. Mm-hmm. And if I hurt you, then I take responsibility. And is there anything I can do for you to fix it.
And Karen, I'm so glad that you said that, because that is the key, another key piece of it that's not in the five basic steps, but this offer of reparations or an offer to try to do something to make amends is huge.
Yes. Yes, and that makes the person know that you really mean it, and it's coming from the heart. Mm-hmm. And because I was in a relationship where the person would constantly just apologize. I'm really sorry. And when you were talking about the fact that that almost does more damage, mm-hmm. it really does, because when somebody's totally unauthentic like that, you can feel it mm-hmm. in your spirit. You're like, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just have been really grateful to be in a program that I can take responsibility for my stuff and then make amends for it.
And then you can model that new self-awareness and maturity to other people and maybe help and inspire them to do the same.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And I just love your program. This has been a really great piece. I liked it very much.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks for taking the time to call.
You bet. You have a beautiful day.
You too. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And I love also the part about the reparations. What can I do to make things better, especially when it's something that you feel very pained about and you want to do some act of kindness or some act of service so that you can earn trust and respect back, but also kind of that physical act of honoring the relationship can be so healing. You know, again, there's a huge difference between, hey, I'm sorry you got pissed at me last night, here are some flowers, and, hey, I had no idea that my actions were hitting you in such a deep and painful way. You know, there's a huge difference between knee-jerk apologizing because it seems like it needs to be done and the actual act of asking for forgiveness and making steps towards healing it. Lindsay, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Hi. And probably adding to the echo chamber that Karen started, I too am in a program. Right now I have a little over 5 years of being clean and sober. And with that comes a lot of apologies and a lot of taking responsibility for the things that I did. You know, during my active addiction, I blamed, you know, I could blame anyone and anything on the reasons that I behaved in the way that I did. But one of the most empowering things about being clean and about being in recovery is taking responsibility for my actions and for acknowledging them, and then being able to, like Karen said before, to take action mm-hmm. With them. I remember one time when I was a teenager, my parents said that, remarked that, you know, it's more important to be trusted than loved. And I thought that has really stuck with me through my life. And so I think that apologies to me are very important, and especially not a fake apology, I'm sorry if you got hurt, or mm-hmm. I'm sorry if this happened, but to accept, like you were saying, I didn't recognize that, you know, you felt that way, or to really take upon it, you know, to really have an introspective look at the situation and your part in it, not to absolve yourself of any sort of fault or anything. I it's sometimes easy to maybe pawn that off on the other person, as if somehow it was their fault for being hurt or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that, just accepting your responsibility in that and not having, I think the other thing was that, you know, apologies that going well or going wrong carry with it a connotation that there were expectations yes. that you wanted the other person to respond in a certain way. And when they do or don't, that kind of determines whether you feel it went well or not. And I think that not having expectations but doing the right thing for the right reason is very important in strengthening relationships and not having them be disappointing or not go the way that you thought they should, but to be able to just do the right thing for the right reasons.
I appreciate that. I do, Lindsay. And you know, it's interesting because when we talk about apologies going terribly wrong or going well, I agree that we don't want to have the expectations that we're going to be let off the hook too easily. But I think I was referring to if we're apologizing and we, you know, end up hurting the person more by saying, I apologize that you're hurt, you're very sensitive, or I'm sorry that you thought this was all about you. And there's a lot of ways that we can apologize that end up being hurtful. And so I think what both you and Karen are saying is that it's really this advancement of our own sense of ourself and self-awareness and taking responsibility for how our actions, everything that comes out of our mouth, every nonverbal message that we send has an impact. No communication experience is neutral. And I don't know if we really pay enough attention to that each comment we make, offhanded or backhanded, every action that we take impacts people in certain ways, and to do our best at all times to try to mitigate when we've hurt someone and to make it right. And then ultimately to be able to accept if the relationship cannot be repaired, to also own that with grace, or to accept that with grace and be able to move on. So thank you for calling. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875, and we're talking about the art of the apology and what that looks like, a communication skill that we need to develop, that we need to teach our children how to use from a very young age. You know, toddlers by the age of 2 recognize that their actions impact other people, that they recognize that other people have different preferences or attentions that may be impacted by their behavior. And so by the time a child is 2 years old, we can be modeling, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. Or I'm sorry you're disappointed that you can't go to the park, but that's not going to happen today. You know, to be able to model all of the ways that we can utilize apologies through our communication. And the other piece is understanding that apologies themselves are a very complex communication tool. That it starts with the very simple, hey, I'm sorry, you know, if we bump elbows or step in front of someone, to the need to take full responsibility for our actions when it's something egregious. It might be an unintended hurt of someone physically, a car accident or a bike accident, or unintended but intended hurt through infidelity. There are needs for apologies on both ends of the spectrum. And also understanding why it is that we apologize. You know, we apologize because we were wrong or at fault for something. We've hurt someone. It's the right thing to do. We've been taught through our social conditioning that it's the right thing to do. And then the intent of the apology should be to acknowledge that you've caused distress or angered someone or hurt them or disappointed them or disrupted their life in some way. And then the goal of the apology really should be to ease the other person's emotional burden. Maybe they've been carrying just anger and sadness or disappointment or confusion about your behavior. And so that goal of the apology should be to ease that burden for them, to affirm that their feelings and experiences are valid. And then maybe you may earn their forgiveness as a result. And as a bonus, if you really are able to produce a heartfelt mea culpa, you may find that your own guilt and regrets ease somewhat. But apologies should always be focused on the other person's needs and feelings and not on our own. And that's often what gets people into trouble, is that our ego gets in the way and we end up not trying to make the other person feel better, but we're trying to make ourselves feel better. You know, I need to get this off my chest. I need to share this with you. I've been carrying so much guilt. I feel so badly. I need to apologize. You know, that's a very self-focused apology of just wanting to feel relief for yourself. You know, and sometimes we need to think about, should I be apologizing or owning something that may ultimately hurt this person so deeply that the wounding can go unhealed, but I just want to feel better myself because I feel such guilt. As I said, apologies are complex, and the answer of when to apologize and how to apologize is always It depends. And it depends on your level of maturity and your partner's level of maturity and what is the value and nature of this relationship. Our most intimate relationships are always worth apologizing for, are always worth fighting for, are always worth engaging in. Because the minute we stop trying to engage and have conversation and apologize is the day that we start to move towards indifference. And indifference kills relationships, not anger, not arguments. Indifference kills relationships. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, I started talking about women and how women or those with a feminine style of communicating tend to apologize often for everything, all the time. Women may apologize often because they've grown up with a diminished, you know, sense of entitlement in the world, that they have to apologize for their very existence. Women might have low self-esteem or an unconscious wish to avoid any possible criticism, or they want to try to appease other people all the time. Or maybe this habit of apologizing all the time is just a social habit, this self-effacing thing that we found that if I just say, I'm sorry, oh, excuse me, I apologize, sorry, not me, that we're over-apologizing as a way of kind of ingratiating ourselves into a relationship. But something we need to understand is that over-apologizing does not necessarily endear you to other people. It actually runs the risk of creating distance because it can be annoying and irritating to have someone constantly apologizing all the time. It disrupts the kind of the natural flow of the relationship and the conversation, the exchange. And then you may irritate your friends who then will dismiss your thoughts or your feelings because you start to sound like you're always the wounded bird or the wounded butterfly. And so if you're in this social habit of consistently trying to apologize for behaviors or just by existing, you're not really building any stronger social ties. You're in many ways might be creating distance. So the art of the apology, where will you go with that? What will be the first thing that you do? Hopefully it's think about where in your life you're feeling kind of that knot in your stomach, because we all have it for something. I think we all probably carry one unresolved apology that needs to be shared. And before you just jump out there and start to express your remorse and your feelings, you need to think about, what is my hope for this exchange? What is my goal? If your goal is to alleviate pain and suffering from the other person, for the other person, that is a noble goal. And make sure you're able to state it in a way that you express your sorrow and regret for what it is you're apologizing for, to acknowledge that the expectation for the relationship was different, and show empathy for their feelings, why you understand this hurt. Right? Forgetting someone's birthday is more than, I was just dumb, it was written on the wrong calendar. But I can see how it would make you feel disrespected that your birthday wasn't something that was in the forefront of my mind today. Like, that's an empathic statement for an apology. And then request forgiveness. But if your goal ultimately is to just appease your own sense of guilt or regret or remorse, then keep it to yourself. Go for a run, write it in your journal. But if you're just looking for your own salvation and not worried about the feelings of the others, then that is something you should keep inside. And that's my thoughts. This has been A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You are always welcome to send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcasts through Apple Podcasts. As always, I appreciate you listening and supporting public radio KCBX. I look forward to continuing this conversation next Tuesday at 2 and see where the conversation takes us.
I'm sorry, two words I always think after you're gone, when I realize I was acting all wrong. So selfish, two words that could describe, oh, actions of mine when patience isn't sure.